Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuc. The first U.S. exhibition to concentrate on artist Andy Warhol's book work, Warhol by the Book, opened at the Williams College Museum of Art March 7th and will be on view through August 16th. From his time as a student in the 1940s until his death in 1987, Warhol created and collected books, in his creations experimenting with form and content. The exhibition at WCMA contains more than 400 objects, covering more than 80 book titles, including unique and unpublished materials that are brought together by WCMA and the Andy Warhol Museum in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the city where Warhol was born. The exhibition showcases a range of material, including paintings, drawings, prints, photographs, and artists' books. It also includes projections of 16 screen test portrait films made by Warhol and featuring writers. Matt Werbeken is the chief archivist at the Andy Warhol Museum in Pittsburgh and the curator of Warhol by the Book. We met in the galleries now housing the show as installation was being completed a few weeks ago, and we began by talking about how this show came to the Williams College Museum of Art.
Williams College has a really great collection of really unique objects, unique materials, thanks to one of their alumni, Richard Holmes.
Class of 46.
Yes, class of 46. His name's all over the show. Like, to do a show like this, you really couldn't do it without Williams. So it kind of brings together our collection, which is Warhol's archives, basically, with the things that Warhol let slip through his fingers, and he sold them.
We're starting today at the beginning of the show. How did you put the show in order, and where do we start?
Well, the show, like anything, it starts at the beginning. It's pretty much a chronological view of Warhol's career. It makes a couple of little U-turns, things like, you know, bounce around just a little bit, but only a few times. So it starts with Warhol's childhood, but the objects that are in the show, they date to his college days in Pittsburgh in the 1940s. So there are a number of books that he owned from that time, things that were given to him by his friends or that were his college textbooks. And some of them have really interesting marginalia in them. Most of them don't. One of them is a psychology textbook, has this enormous, I mean, as far as books go, two-page doodle. It's like a full-on two-page doodle with like every centimeter covered with some crazy line. So it's kind of like a masterpiece of book doodles.
I know it's the point of the entire show, but could you summarize his relationship with books and what that means and why it should be an exhibition?
Warhol worked with books his whole life. As the show points out, you know, he had a very profound religious faith, and, you know, the prayer book that his family used was one of the most important objects from his early days. He kept a scrapbook when he was a young kid, and that was another important book. But then throughout his career as a professional, he was a graphic artist. So books, magazines, LP covers, all these things that were out there that, you know, he could get paid for, and he was hot on the trail of getting paid. So, you know, he did at least 19 book covers that we know of in that time that stretched from about 1951 to 1963. There's probably more that are out there that we don't know yet, is that they are very obscure sometimes. You know, there are times when Warhol isn't even given credit as the artist or his name is misspelled. You know, Warhol, I think, like a lot of people, you know, they dream of writing the great American novel, right? I mean, like, maybe people don't dream of that anymore, but in Warhol's day, they sure did. His novel wound up, that is, being written with the aid of a tape recorder. But as far as his overall, you know, books were, you know, just a part of, it's part of life, right? It's a part of our culture. And Warhol, despite all of his attempts to hide it, he was an extremely cultured person and spent a lot of time in bookshops and acquired a huge number of books. As you'll see in the exhibition here, there's a recreation of a portion of Warhol's library. So you can see the kind of books that he owned, and you can leaf through them just like he did.
Let's start looking at what we have here.
Yeah.
Where do you want to take us first?
There's a group of three drawings that we have in the show that were for an assignment to illustrate a short story by Catherine Ann Porter called Old Mortality. And there's two watercolors and a charcoal drawing. And you can see this like really beautiful sinuous line that he was working with at the time. And he was actually a really great draftsman. He's kind of spent his professional career hiding that fact.
I was going to say, for one like myself who doesn't know that much about Warhol, like nothing beyond what everybody knows, this I would never have guessed that these were his.
Yeah, so this is your chance to see them. There's two other drawings here for another college assignment to illustrate the novel All the King's Men by Robert Penn Warren, which is kind of a very famous story about the bad politicians in our country, which we have too many of. And then, you know, there's the first cabinet in the show. There are 17 or 18 of these cabinets in the exhibition, which were designed to kind of look a little bit like bookcases. And even the colors that we chose for them are meant to evoke the type of furnishings that Warhol would have been surrounded with at that moment that the books date to. So this cabinet full of books from his student days is just a kind of a ruddy brown color that's like any kind of secondhand store brown.
And the books on the shelves, are they a selection of a number of other books like these that are chosen to be here, or are you getting most of them on the shelves?
There's a number that I left out. I tried to pick ones that I thought were really significant for Warhol, especially for his later life. Like the Gertrude Stein book called The World is Round, which includes the famous quotation, "Rose is a rose is a rose." It's in that book. About 35 years later, Warhol did a portrait of Gertrude Stein. And that's actually how the show ends. So we're kind of following Gertrude's pronouncement. We're going in a circle.
And also bookending the show with Stein.
Exactly. We have a lot of things like that in the show. Yes, thank you for noticing that.
Of course. Yeah. What should we look at next?
We could probably look at each and everything, but let's not.
Right.
Maybe we could look at Pistols for Two, which is the first book cover that Warhol did as a professional. And we have five drawings in the exhibition that relate to that, including two that bear all the marks of, the publisher's, printing and all the processes that the drawing would have had to pass through to get to the final stage of being published. So I think that's a really great thing about the exhibition too, is that people will see what life was like before we all went digital, because there are digital things in the show, but no digital actual work. We have, 17 iPads in the exhibition. So, if you want to see, for instance, all the pages of a certain book, you can do that just by checking out the iPad. I think maybe we should talk about Truman Capote.
I agree.
Warhol had, let's say, a major crush on Truman Capote in the early 1950s. Capote was a young writer of fiction at that time, roughly the same age as Warhol, a little bit older. And he had a best-selling book called Other Voices, Other Rooms, the back cover of which had this photograph of Capote shot by the photographer Harold Halma, where Capote just is his eyes are kind of like searing into your soul in this photograph. And, he's got this, and he's like kind of lounging on this couch. And for a young gay man like Andy, I mean, it just went right to his heart. So he started, I don't know how to put it exactly, he really kind of bombarded Capote with fan mail, sending him postcards all the time, calling his home. Supposedly his mother would answer the phone. It's like she was an alcoholic, and they would get together and have drinks. It's like, I don't know how true that is, but those are stories.
Right.
Warhol attended the first production of Capote's play, The Grass Harp, and we have his copy of the playbill in the exhibition. We also have one of the postcards that Warhol was sending to Capote. Obviously this one he didn't send, but it's addressed to him. And for whatever reason, he didn't send it. I'm really glad he didn't, because now we know for sure. Because I don't know if Capote saved as much stuff as Warhol did. I mean, and really, Warhol's pack rat behavior is really, it's key now to so many exhibitions that we do. I mean, we just learned so much about his life that otherwise would be lost. So there's the postcard, then we also have a letter from Capote's agent to Warhol, and then the announcement card for Warhol's first solo exhibition in New York, which was titled 15 Drawings Based on the Writing of Truman Capote. And then, in the same case, all that stuff is from 1951, 52. In the same case, the same display cabinet, there is Warhol's invitation from Truman Capote to Capote's famous black and white ball at the Plaza Hotel. So this is 1966. You know, by then Warhol, his star has really ascended, and Capote now isn't afraid of him anymore like he was in 1952, and he sees him as a peer. So he was one of the lucky 400 people to get one of these invitations. And then fast forward another decade or so, and there's a cover of Rolling Stone that has Truman Capote's photo on the cover, and Warhol actually interviewed Truman Capote for Rolling Stone. And then a few years after that, Capote is now writing for Warhol's magazine, Interview Magazine. And then also two really great objects from the Williams College collection, which are two books by Andy Warhol that came from Truman Capote's personal library. So it really comes full circle again. Yeah. And then you'll see more Capote later in the exhibition as well.
Great.
He's a big theme in the show.
It sounds like he would have to be.
He is big. Yes. Yes.
We're walking around Warhol by the book at the Williams College Museum of Art with Matt Warbican, the chief archivist at the Andy Warhol Museum.
Other writers that Warhol actually did work with, Ralph T. Ward, who was known as Corky. Warhol collaborated with a number of writers all throughout his life, and Corky was one of the very first. They did at least four books together that we know of. Two of them were actually published, self-published, but they were out there, and all of them are represented in the exhibition. Thanks to Corky's heirs, we have copies of rejection letters that Warhol and Corky received from publishers. We also have copies of the portraits that Andy made of Corky, and a photo of Corky, and a really, really beautiful illustrated letter that Corky sent to Andy, talking about the books and talking about things that are very personal. So we learn a lot more about Andy's personal life, which is just really, it's amazing to have that. Another writer that Warhol was working with around the same time in 1955 was a poet named Ralph Pomeroy. He wrote the text for a book based on Proust's A la recherche du temps perdu, which Ralph and Andy transposed into A la recherche du chou perdu. Warhol had a great foot fetish, it's well known, and there's plenty of evidence of that in the exhibition, and this is the first of that. There's also a great photograph of Warhol laying in bed, covered with his face covered in high heels, which you'll see later on. But we have the manuscript for Chou Perdu. What they did was they took little phrases from popular culture, maybe the title of a movie or of a poem or a phrase from a book, or a title of a book like The Autobiography of Alice B. Chou. You've read that, right? And then they, you know, that phrase is written underneath a really amazing drawing of a shoe in Warhol's blotted line style, which is then hand-colored. You know, Warhol would have these coloring parties for these things. He would invite all of his friends to go to the Serendipity Cafe or someplace else, and they would all have watercolor paints and piles of lithographs to color in. There's a video that my colleagues in the education department at the Warhol Museum produced on how Warhol made his blotted line drawings. So visitors to the show can see that. In 1954, Warhol met this handsome young man named Charles Lazenby, and he developed a massive crush on Charles. Charles was a stage designer, set designer, and actually went on to have a really amazing long career. He won Emmy Awards. He had a really amazing career. And you know, Warhol got him somehow, we don't really know how, to write the text, quote, unquote, for this book called 25 Cats Named Sam and One Blue Pussy. The text only consists of about 7 words in total, but he is credited, as you can see right there, written by Charles Lazenby. It's a book of about 16 drawings of cats. At that time, Warhol was living with a lot of Siamese cats, and so that was the inspiration for the book. He got a lot of the images for his cats out of other books, which are also in the exhibition here. A lot of Warhol's drawings at that time especially were based on existing images that he found in the media, like in magazines or in other books, and he would just copy them, or he would trace them, sometimes very freehand, sometimes like very carefully, and you'll see evidence of that throughout the exhibition. Two of the books that are here is All Kinds of Cats by Walter Chandoa. Andy's assistant from that time, Nathan Gluck, had said that that was the book that Warhol used. And you can see that there is definitely a connection between those images. So that's really possible. But then I found, about a year ago, I found this book, which is also called Sam. And it's from the 1930s. And there's a photograph of a cat, and it's such an unusual photograph, and it really matches this pose of the cat that is not only on the cover, but also on the title page of the book. And so that is definitely, I would say, one of the sources. Although I also have to say that neither of those books were found within Warhol's library after he died. So he may have borrowed a copy from someone, who's to say, but in any case, it seems unlikely that he would have been doing these things freehand. And then we also have 6 framed drawings that are hand-colored drawings that are more like prints that we found in one of Warhol's time capsules at the museum just about 2 years ago. So you can really see like the really brilliant color of these watercolors that they were using at the time. They're really fugitive, very light-sensitive color. To see something that's really hasn't seen the light of day in over half a century, you know, is really, really special, I think. And then there's a photo of Warhol with some of his cats named Sam, because they really were all named Sam, except for one who was named Hester.
The show is huge.
Yeah, it is. It's huge, yeah.
It's great.
So this is the 60s gallery. I mean, I could talk forever about any one of these things. Oh, yeah, we have audio in this one. Can you hear it? That's the actual recording that Warhol put inside of this book.
Oh, wow.
There's a flexi disc here. So I guess we should talk about what the book is. In the 1960s gallery in the exhibition, there is one entire cabinet devoted to a single book, which is probably Warhol's masterpiece as far as his contributions to books goes. It's called Andy Warhol's Index Book. It's from 1967, and it's often referred to as the children's book for adults because it has a lot of really fun things in it. I mean, Warhol made use of pop-ups from kids' books and other sources. Random House had a lot of connections to a lot of resources like that, and they were able to pull a lot of things in and let Warhol just have his pick of what they had found. So there's a big pop-up of a castle, and there are pop-ups of this is Bob Dylan's nose, which was custom for the book. There's another pop-up of an old biplane. There's one of Hunt's tomato paste, a can of Hunt's tomato paste that pops up. There's this thing, which is really cool. It's like it's normally flat like this, but there, when you would open the book for the first time, it was no longer flat. It would pop out, like literally pop out of the book, because it's held together with a rubber band on the inside. And so once the pressure was released, this thing would just shoot out of the book at you. And it's a polyhedron of lightweight cardboard that's printed with a self-portrait by the photographer Billy Name, who lives in your area. He lives in Poughkeepsie. Yeah, yeah. And he was one of Warhol's right hands at this time. He was responsible for making the Silver Factory, and he, for this project, the index book, he oversaw it from Warhol's side. You know, Random House had their own people, their own designers who were working on it, and Billy was there to approve everything. And it's illustrated with many of Billy's photographs. One is here, this photo of Lou Reed in his very cool Ray-Bans. And as you can see, it's printed on a flexi disc. So it's a record that you could tear out of the book and then place on your turntable and listen to it through your speakers, your big speakers, your Harman Kardon. The thing that's really cool about the recording is that, you know, because Lou Reed's photo is on it, you would think that it would be a recording of the Velvet Underground, which would be great, but it actually isn't that. And instead, it's a recording of Nico and a few other people who are, for the very first time, looking through a copy of the book. The book that the recording is inside of. And at one point she says, oh, there's a picture of Lou and it looks like it's on a record. What are you going to put on the record? And they tell her, well, we're recording it right now. It's going to be you. And so it's this really great self-referential moment that is just like, I mean, you know, Warhol did so many things that were so far ahead of his time. To do something like that in 1967 yeah. was really kind of just beyond belief. Yeah, yeah. So a thing that makes this display really special is, again, the Williams College Museum has this amazing collection of this material. They have all three of the mock-ups that were made for this book. Each one is completely different than the last. They have features that had to be deleted from the final production of the book because they were too expensive. Mm-hmm. Which is really a shame because some of them were really great. So, and people will be able to see all of that, like, again, on the iPads that we have in the show. And then there's also one copy of the book where you can actually see the balloon in the book, which is one of the features. That they inserted an actual rubber balloon. Most copies of the book, the pages have fused together because the rubber is just, like, you know, decomposed.
Right.
But again, Williams has a copy where you can actually see the balloon. It's like, it's miraculous.
This is linear. It's very high contrast, black and white, not like an ordinary photograph.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
That's pretty exciting.
How about the empty pages? Why don't they remain empty?
They have words on them.
Wait. That's a very good idea, Nick.
Is it really?
Yes.
Warhol started making portraits of Marilyn Monroe like very shortly after she died in 1962, and he kept returning to her portrait over and over again throughout the years, partly because he knew that people would buy them. but also, and he was very obsessed with her image, and I think just the degree of her stardom, it just seems like unparalleled. Mm-hmm. And so 5 years after her death in 1967, he produced this portfolio of 10 prints of Marilyn Monroe, which are in these really garish, incredible colors, you know, fluorescence, like day glow fluorescence, like I think probably like no one had ever seen before. And they were very popular. And around that time, it seems like he took a few of them and cut them apart using a metal die, like, you know, like an octagonal shaped cutter,
right,
basically, that would just cut out sections of the prints. And then he taped them edge to edge together in this long accordion fold book, presumably thinking that he would either, one, see what it looked like, and then two, if he liked how it looked and if it was economically feasible, you know, that they would run with it and publish a book. But to make this book, they would have to cut up three prints to make each one. And that was, like, you know, a very expensive book.
Right. It's priceless at this point.
Yeah, yeah. And so they only got as far as this unique maquette, which we have in the Warhol Museum's collection. It has 38 pages. Each one is a different detail from one of the prints. of Marilyn. And we also have two of the prints of Marilyn, like so the full, so you can kind of see the relationship between the artwork and the book maquette. It unfolds to a length of over 30 feet. We have it in this display cabinet that's kind of like a horse's trough, that unfolding to about 16 feet. But then we also have five little peaks in it, so you can get a little bit more than 16 feet. And you can really see this kind of amazing object and maybe just imagine what it would be like to flip through the pages.
Warhol by the Book will be at the Williams College Museum of Art through August 16th, and here we enter the last room of the galleries that we'll visit today.
We have a library, appropriately enough. Williams has this great room here, which has these beautiful built-in bookcases. It's very cozy, not lots of nice furniture and carpeting and nice reading lamps. And they actually went out on the internet and using a list of books that I gave them that we have from Warhol's library, they started buying copies all over the place, and the room is really filled up pretty quickly, and you can see just what Warhol was reading, and it's amazing just how diverse his interests were. I mean, you would think he would just be reading about art, right. And that's like one of the last things that he was reading about. He was reading about celebrities and movie stars, and he was reading diet books and cookbooks, and he was reading about science, and he was reading fiction, books by his friends. Like, for example, there's a book here that's an analysis of a character in Shakespeare plays that was written by a very good friend of his named Paul Bertram, who was a scholar at Rutgers. And I got to meet Paul a number of years ago. And he told us the story, really great story, of how he and Andy would go to hear music, or they would go to see a play, or they would go to the opera or the theater, see a movie, whatever. And they would always discuss it, either before or afterwards. They would have dinner. And, you know, he said, you know, this, like, thing, you know, that where Warhol became well known for acting dumb was just a put on. You know, it was not his real personality at all. He actually was really a very intelligent person who could discuss these things, you know, at length. And so it was great to have that confirmed by someone who actually knew him, you know, with this story. And I mean, who am I to doubt him?
Matt Werbeken is the chief archivist at the Andy Warhol Museum in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and the curator of Warhol by the Book, which will be on display at the Williams College Museum of Art in Williamstown, Massachusetts through August 16th. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.